Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I'm Tim, and the reason you're not hearing the music is because we are doing this podcast remotely from our three individual TMO shipping containers around various parts of Greater Manchester and North Wales. So, JB, your shipping container in Wales, how's it doing?
It's all right. I had to stay in the shipping container because I was painting my boat this weekend, and It's light and the boat needs painting. I don't know what else to tell you. I mean, that's literally what I've been doing.
And Phil, in another part of South Manchester, in your shipping container, hello.
Hello, Tim. Now when we spent hundreds of thousands of pounds commissioning these three high-spec, audio-quality Egg Chasers branding shipping containers, people thought we were crazy. But we've got a lot of use out of these, haven't we?
We really have.
So much.
And when they're not in use, they're on the Ever Given, taking goods back and forth around the world. I do feel like I've cheated people with no music. So, but because I do my radio show from home sometimes, I do actually have a little soundboard with some sounds on. So I don't know what I just. Oh, do you know what I have got, which might come in handy?
that's old school.
I've got that one.
To the podcast 9 years ago, we had so many drops.
We did. And I've got
made it for a lack of knowledge and access.
And I did appreciate this as well. This appeared on my show the other day, so I'll just share it. This is Noel Gallagher. He's asked a question by a school child, and I like how quick and funny his answer is. Have a listen.
What's your favourite dinosaur?
Phil Collins.
Oh, I appreciate that.
He's genuinely one of the funniest blokes in public life.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
Genuinely is. Do you know who else is one of the funniest blokes? I don't know why I'm starting with a non-rugby related thing, but I've just fallen down I've fallen down a Limmy wormhole, and I love that man.
I don't know who this guy is, except for one video which was sent to me this week of him doing a sketch with some coppers, and it was bloody brilliant.
Yeah, he's got some good stuff, hasn't he? Scottish comedian, Limmy.
Very good. Very good. So on this podcast, we're going to talk about the Premiership. We're going to talk about various other rugby stories. The Eddie Jones saga is rumbling on. We've got another saga that is rumbling on that hasn't been resolved yet, which we'll talk about. JB's got a little rugby-related film/documentary review.
Review, yeah. No Woman, No Try.
So I take it you didn't play any rugby this weekend then, Jay?
No, sadly not. We've got two games left and we were meant to play Ormskirk away. But Ormskirk happened to have a wedding. So they cancelled. They couldn't raise a team out of their... Well, they could raise a team out of their twos and threes, but, you know, they didn't feel that it would be good for the morale of their club to face Tok H. I think on balance they might have been right. So they cancelled, which, you know, it is what it is. It's a shame. But I tell you what, there's so many games which have been cancelled this season. The clubs are really struggling just to get back into the swing of it. Here's one for you. I'm not going to get too much on the local rugby yet because I'm sure we can do it later. But I'm back in Wales, and because I was back in Wales and I had a free weekend, I tried to find a game. Almost every club that I know of in Wales that I've got contacts in have not got a game. The only one that had a game this weekend was Mould, and that was their first league game since January 9th. I mean, people give the RFU stick for various things, and sometimes they deserve it, but hats off to them. At least the leagues went ahead. Lads in North Wales, well, particularly in Mould, have not had a league game since January. That is an absolutely abysmal showing.
And they will find it even harder. In England, some teams, as you've mentioned, have found it hard to get players back after the long period off, the long enforced break. But having not played for such a long period of time, they'll just find it even harder to get players back.
Oh, yeah, completely, completely. And it kind of compounds itself, doesn't it? The less games that you play, the less guys come back. You know, they get used to going to IKEA on weekends and whatnot. It's just not good. It's just really not good. The WRU have got a lot to answer for, particularly in rugby in North Wales. By all means, give the RFU a hard time, but I can't help but think that English rugby has been managed far better post-pandemic than Welsh rugby has.
Well, on that tip, let's start with a really positive rugby story, actually. I know you said we'll get onto local rugby later, but I love this so much. I want to share it at the start because this is what rugby is all about. And it's an email that's come into contacteggchasers@gmail.com from Tom Taylor. And he says, afternoon, chaps.
Is it Tom Taylor?
Not Tommy Taylor.
Oh, right.
A different Tom Taylor. He says, love the pod, blah, blah, blah. Just wanted to share the great fun had down in Kent 2 yesterday. Old Graves Endians were playing Whitstable, and Whitstable had the chance to top the table in the last game of the season if they won. The other team in contention were Dartford Valley. They didn't have a game, so literally sent a coach load of fans and players to support OGs in their efforts to see off Whitstable.
Awesome.
Yeah.
In a tense affair, Dartford Valley supporters made a constant racket throughout the game, aided by a lad with a big drum and various vuvuzelas. It ended in a perfect JB score of 7-3, two OGs, and the crowd went wild, as can be seen in the video. All three teams took a moment after the game to commiserate, congratulate, then enjoy a bit of OG's hospitality. And
wonderful.
And there is a video, and this is on the Dartford Valley Rugby Club Facebook page. It's worth a look. They literally sent a busload of people to go and watch a Kent 2 match that they weren't involved in, but could. This is on the touchline. It's looks an absolute riot, and it's what rugby
sounds like. It's pro de deux.
Yeah, it's very much like that. There was there's a massive racket and a whole heap of people, and it looked like a hoot. So I loved it.
Whilst we're on it, your boys Marlow did all right, Tim.
Stop trying to make me and Marlow a thing.
You're a massive. You've been on record, haven't you? Love Marlow. They only went and beat Reading this weekend.
Did they now?
They beat Reading, second in the table. Big wow. Result. Came out of nowhere.
Well, the big game in the northwest of England this weekend was today, and it was a Lancashire Cup top of the pool, unbeaten matchup between Raffy Quirk's Broughton Park under-14s and Fylde under-14s. And it finished 31 to Fylde, 27 to Broughton Park. But an epic, an epic game. Match. Very good game.
Yeah, Fylde are always a good club. I remember a few ding-dong battles with them when I was in the age grades.
Yeah, the battle for the ages. As for how much rugby did you watch this weekend?
I've seen three games.
Oh, yeah, I've, all the highlights, including Leinster Munster and Bulls Ulster, which I wish I hadn't watched.
Yeah.
And then the three games, although I was a bit patchy on Friday nights, but the Saturday-Sunday games were two entertaining affairs.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, weren't they just?
I mean, some people have now pretty much, you think, ruled themselves out of top four. And that race is kind of slimming down. One horse is falling at the fence every round, pretty much, aren't they?
Yeah, but then every time a horse falls, a couple more horses gain ground. It's not quite so straightforward to me. I mean, Gloucester somehow managed to lose, amazingly. Obviously, Sale lost. Northampton seems to be back in it again now. And then Exeter win as well. So I don't think the top four picture is much clearer, other than I think Sale might have blown it.
Sale and Irish, perhaps. Blown it now. Sale and Irish are gone, but like you say, Northampton are having a late surge.
Northampton a surge. I agree, Sale and Irish have probably blown it beyond some miracle results. Gloucester are interesting, though, because they're in seventh. They are 7 points behind Exeter Chiefs, but they have got two games in hand. So it is still within their gift. If they win those two games in hand, bonus point wins, it's still within their control. But losing at home to Wasps, will be frustrating for Gloucester fans, because that should have been a 4 or 5 point win the way that they've been going this season.
Yeah, it should have been.
You can effectively put Gloucester, who are currently on 19 games, 55 points. You can put them on 20 games and either 59 or 60 points, which would still put them, like you say, a game in hand and 2 points behind Exeter. So it's theirs to lose still.
Yeah, it is.
Last week, I can't remember what I said. This week, I feel Exeter are going to do it. I just feel that they are the more battle-hardened team. I think this is, it's almost like knockout rugby for them now. They know they need to win every game. I'm not sure they're going to do very well in the playoffs, but they know they need to win every game, basically.
They do. Exeter have to win every game. And this week, it's interesting because you watch that first half and you think Exeter are going to fluff their lines. Bath were going to win this. Bath scored 3 tries in the first half, 2 good Thokunasinga tries, and Exeter were struggling. And then a couple of moments of magic from Patrick Schickling, who, I don't know if you saw the Stuart Hogg crossfield kick for Schickling bursting down the left wing. It was a thing of beauty. It's a moment of magic.
Once Mr. Schickling learns to scrimmage properly, and he seems to have got over his early stutters when it comes to scrimmaging, he's going to be a hell of a player. He is enormous.
And he can motor. Yeah. I could not believe how fast he was going down the ring. And the best thing about that break, so Stuart Hogg break down the middle, if you've not seen it, he then finds himself isolated and he's looking around for options. There's no one. But immediately, signalling for the crossfield kick is Schickling going full pelt, signal, hands in the air, put it in the corner. I've got this. And he got
that.
It was so disappointing that he got stopped just before the line. It's a great little moment, though.
The massive Tom Hendricks and tiny Ian Whitten in centres again.
Yeah,
just that contrast.
You've got to hand it to Exeter. You've got to have something serious about you to, with what, 20, just over 20 minutes to go, be down points. What, and they were 22-7 down at one point.
It's a combination. Obviously, Exeter have great mental strength. They've shown over a long period of time that they do have good fitness. And Bath, if we say the opposite of those two things are true of Bath, it's not really.
Although they were, what were they, 3 games unbeaten or 3 wins in a row? Coming into it. They were coming into it, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
I think if you count Premiership Cup.
That's where we're going wrong. No, I don't count Premiership Cup.
No, okay.
Yeah,
you just reminded me as you were talking as well of a tweet we got earlier this week at Rugby Podcast. Sam Coburn, who tweeted us with and he's posted a little screenshot of an account called Very British Problems. And it said, what does Phil mean when he says, quote, interesting? And then meanings of interesting. 1, interesting. 2, remarkably boring. 3, suspicious. 4, curious. 5, this food tastes strange. 6, I'm afraid I'm not listening. 7, you've lost me. 8, you're wrong, but okay. And 9, I don't care.
Yes, it could be a lot of things.
I do at various different times mean all of those things.
Sometimes simultaneously.
Just in terms of, I can't remember what put me onto it, but I was going to say, there is quite an interesting potential storm brewing at the moment. So we still haven't, at the time of recording this podcast, we still haven't had any resolution from Worcester not fulfilling the fixture against Gloucester in the Premiership last weekend.
Okay.
Gloucester, Worcester, which was supposed to be the Friday night game last weekend.
Yeah. So Worcester didn't fulfill a Premiership fixture last weekend. Usually, if that's COVID, on the Tuesday, there would be Premier League rugby would award points as they have done through the COVID period, usually 4 points, 2 points, on the Tuesday following that cancelled game. That didn't happen. They passed it on, still haven't done it now. And so far as I can tell, from what I'm hearing, it's because there is a conflict in terms of what one group are saying and what another group are saying and potentially what the facts on the ground actually are.
What do we think the groups are saying?
So Worcester are saying they told Gloucester on the Thursday.
Yeah. And this is what I understand. I understand they were told 2 o'clock, Premiership Rugby were told 2 o'clock on Thursday.
Yeah. They also said that they tried to get props from other Premiership clubs. I don't know if they said Championship clubs.
But... No, I think they did. I think they looked at Premiership clubs and Championship clubs, but I think Championship clubs with Premiership experience.
And Worcester also said that, or Worcester's official statement on the Friday was that a prop failed a fitness test on Friday, and that was the reason for the cancellation. Steve Diamond came out and gave quite a punchy, long video on Worcester's account, which I think slightly contradicted the reason that they gave for cancelling the game. He said it was illness on the Thursday night and more illness on the Friday morning, not a fitness test failed on the Friday, which the statement said. And now Gloucester have come out and said, they didn't tell us on the Friday, and they seem to be suggesting that there's other facts on the ground which don't match up, which have been passed along.
So I assume the fitness test was COVID-related.
If it's COVID-related, then they will have to have official, there'll be paperwork that will verify all of that testing. I just get the impression from just piecing various bits together that, well, certainly in terms of what's been said publicly, one or other camp is not telling the truth. Well, knowingly or unknowingly, they're not saying it how it is.
Look, I don't know any more than what I've been told. Yeah, no, you're all right. The fitness test was for a player who wasn't inflicted with COVID, but then he does his fitness test and couldn't pass it. And then, yeah, Diane says as well, doesn't he, that it's not his call, it's the doctor's call. Here's one thing that I do know, and I know this 100%. Dimes will have crossed his T's and dotted his I's. Like, you might think that you can get him on something or that Worcester does something wrong, but I guarantee whatever the law says, he will have followed that.
What I thought was interesting was that on the Wednesday night, they had 4 players from Hartbury in their squad. Hartbury, who hadn't had a game 4 days prior when they cancelled the game. And this almost seems like trolling. Worcester had 1, 2, 3, they had 5 props in their matchday squad on the Wednesday night.
So it doesn't... the facts, I'm sure, will come out, or a version of the truth from both sides will come out. It's not a great look when you can't fulfil a fixture on the weekend and then you can fulfil 2 fixtures the following week, just 4 days afterwards.
I just don't see what the advantage is. That's why I tend to believe...
I'm not... If you had to pick one fixture... One doesn't matter because there's no relegation, and one could get you to a knockout semi-final with a chance of winning a trophy. Anyway, let's not go down that rabbit hole. All I'm saying is that the two camps are saying different things, and it hasn't been resolved still.
Mm. I mean, why is it not a PRL matter?
Yeah, I'm looking at the PRL statement at the moment, and they said this was on Tuesday. They can confirm that they have asked Sports Resolution UK to form an independent panel to adjudicate the game not being played. Basically,
this is their job.
Well,
this is their job, surely.
But something is going on, and it's not something's going on. Not from the Gloucester side. Some dispute is occurring around the availability of players and replacements from the Worcester side, because we've got quite clear process and protocols of 4 points, 2 points that have been set up over the last 2 years that you would expect this game to fall into unless Worcester contested that. Therefore, you can assume that Worcester are contesting that assumption.
Or Gloucester are contesting it, because if it was a COVID cancellation, Gloucester don't get any financial compensation for the season ticket holders that they've had to reimburse. And as I say, I think they have about 9,000. And if you say, let's just pluck a figure out of the air, which might be inaccurate, 20 quid. If they've had to give every season ticket holder £20 back, that on its own, before you get into... concession stalls, staff members that might have had to... That's 180 grand right there. We could be talking several hundred thousand pounds which Gloucester are out of pocket. And they may well be contesting it, saying, no, Worcester, you're paying that.
Yeah, and do you know what? I don't know what Gloucester's figures are like. No idea. I have been to King's Home and it's ace. But if this was Exeter allegedly do £1 million worth of trade every single home game. So, we're not talking about trivial amounts of money here. A home game is a big deal.
And you've been to King's Home, when all the pubs nearby and all the fish and chip shops and stuff, they'll rely on it.
There's all sorts of secondary businesses that rely on these games going ahead.
So,
I guess my biggest problem with this is like Premiership should sort it out. I mean, this is exactly the reason the body exists.
The body's not independent though, is it?
No.
Because the body is governed by the clubs.
But neither is, you know, the commissioner of the NFL. And they don't seem to need to go to Sports UK to sort out things. They just sort them out. There should be power within PRL to do this kind of thing.
Well, I guess that's a separate discussion. But if not, that's not the position we're in at the moment.
But I'm assuming that it's going to be resolved this week. All I'm saying is it could just blow over without any issue, but this could be a little firework that's just about to go off.
Mm. Yeah. If you look at Dimes' record with brushes with the rugby law, the only time he really gets caught out in my mind is when he gets very emotional post game and he says things which he shouldn't say. Other than that, he's a very, very astute character when it comes to this. I'd be amazed if what he has done, if he has done it, if he is responsible in any way, contravenes any rules. And I suspect that is why Gloucester are getting so angry.
But Worcester this week, I don't know if either of you saw any of the Worcester performance.
Abject. No,
yeah, abject is being kind to Worcester, to be honest. A Newcastle team that's not going well, absolutely hammered them, rolled them
so
over.
So Worcester were meant to have their week off this week. It's been cancelled. So all the players are back in on Monday.
They had it off last week.
Yeah, true. So I spoke to a couple of fans from Worcester, who described it as the worst performance I've seen in a couple of years. Now, I think, ironically, this is where you get your money from Steve Diamond, though, because he will not put up with that. And I think a lot of pro rugby players will get away with poor performances, particularly with a new coach, because the new coach will be trying to sort of curry favour or, you know, get on the right side of the lads. Have you ever been to Carrington after a sale loss back in the day?
I must have done.
I haven't.
It's terrifying. It's legitimately terrifying. Like the mood is dark. Like they wanted to win back in the day so much just to avoid that mood. And I think this is where Steve Diamond is absolutely brilliant. They will find out very quickly as professionals that this is not acceptable, and it's going to be a very, very harsh learning curve for them. And that is why he can get such good results from what people think of as poor squads. And I'd say that this Worcester squad is actually better than a lot of the Sale teams that he had back in the day. So they're going to get a very, very harsh, rude awakening.
Well, that was a record Premiership defeat against a Newcastle side that haven't won in 11 games.
Mm.
Now, sticking with Worcester for a little bit, I think they've signed two players. Has this been confirmed?
Yeah, Cam Neild and Curtis Langdon from Sale Sharks.
Now, I didn't hear that bit. I heard the Sale Sharks said Cam Neild and Curtis Langdon were leaving, but I didn't see the other part.
Yeah, they have announced them signing.
Good signings. Really, really good signings. Langdon in particular is excellent. If Cam Neild can stay fit, they'll like him too. A bit budget, but they'll be fine. I don't know for the life of me why Sale would let Langdon go. I get why they'd let Cam Neild go. He's very good, but too injury prone. And also too limited in, you know, what he offers around the field and what he offers as a rugby player. But the thing he does do when he's fit, he's very, very good at. Very good at.
I guess we shouldn't depart from... Oh, sorry, go on, Phil.
I'm just going to say, Jay, I hope you're right on the turnaround that Steve Diamond can invoke in that Worcester squad, because that was a terrible performance. And I like this Worcester team. I think they've got some really talented players. They've got a good mix of some kind of local talent and some talented foreign stars as well. And they should be performing better than that. And I hope you're right that Diamond can get more out of the team than that.
Yeah.
But flip side, Newcastle played great. Newcastle could only beat what was in front of them. And they beat them handily. And they looked good doing it as well. That number 8, whose name escapes me at the moment, was...
Chick. Not Callum Chick.
No, not Callum Chick.
Carl Ferns?
Oh.
not Carl Ferns. Lockwood. He looked great. Good calorie. Big, strong boy, BSB. Look really good. Looks like he needs a bit more conditioning work, but
hold on, is he the loose head prop Lockwood? Sam Lockwood.
Don't know. I'm just looking him up. Freddie Lockwood.
Oh no, maybe it's brother of.
It may well be. So he's 21, only just turned 21. 6'2", 6'3", 113 kilos, although he's definitely heavier than that, looking at him. He was good.
Wow, that is a big boy.
BSB.
Yeah, he looked great.
Just on the midweek Premiership Rugby Cup game, I have to mention the BSB that was Jack Bartlett, who was player of the match, came on after like 15 minutes for Jack Clement at number 8. I think he wasn't even meant to be in Gloucester's match day squad, and due to an injury, got himself on the bench. Then due to an injury, he was on the field for 60 minutes, 65 minutes. Player of the match, comfortably, BSB.
Tell you what, without doubt, and this is why I really hate the Worcester situation, my favourite stories in rugby are those sorts of stories. Like, nobody knows this kid. He was playing, I don't know, a bunch of dentists and doctors a few weeks ago, or students, or whatever the hell he was doing. But it wasn't Premiership Rugby. Then you get the bench, and then someone goes down, and then you're starting, and then you do well, and then you're in the team next week, and so on and so forth. And you see the career building. Absolutely love it. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, it's great to get those opportunities.
Jay George, who's emailed us, contactheadchasers@gmail.com, will love all the Worcester content that we've had so far. He is a Worcester fan, listens weekly from Germany, and has mentioned all of the signings that you've talked about, the two Sale guys coming in, and is hoping for the Diamond Revolution. We will see. Because we sort of touched on some Sale lads there. How physical was Friday night? Brutal.
I know, but it's hard to get excited about this. I just feel that we're seeing the same Sale team that we did 2 years ago. They win the games they should do. They lose the games that they're expected to, or should I say, the bigger games. You know, a few years ago, it was against Exeter, 2 games in a row. This year, it's been against Saracens. I just don't think that they've progressed. That'd be my main issue with it. And it's interesting they've not progressed, because you've got two coaches in completely different styles, and they've just not moved forward. I think there are reasonable circumstances as to why they've not moved forward. I think there's a small transition going on within the club. But you can't say that they're any better than they were 2 years ago. You just can't. I think they're, you know, yeah, they're almost exactly the same.
And this is an arm wrestle game that, you're right, a couple of years ago, they would have been losing it. And they lost it this time around. And they lost it because Saracens took a couple of their chances. And Sale didn't take their chances. And Sale didn't really create many chances either.
No, they didn't. Like, it's... What is disappointing, I guess, is the big players play exactly as you expect them to. So you get the big carries from Dupree's, but we had that 2 years ago. Like, so what is different about this team to what it was, I don't know, 2 years ago? Is the, you know, have they got better attacking structures? Have they got better processes? Is the line-out better? What is better now than it was previously? And I can't tell you. They've got players of high quality. They put those players on the field, and if they don't win because they're better man for man or out physical the team, they don't win.
The one thing that's gone backwards at Sale, and it was starting to happen under Diamond, and it's continued to be an issue, is, do you remember when we used to talk about how devastating they were in attack? They managed to get to the outside and create overlaps all the time. They just aren't creating those opportunities, and they haven't done all season.
They haven't for about, you're right, yeah, they haven't for about 5 years, have they really? There was a time when I think Sale had to play in that way because they didn't have the firepower up front. They were almost forced to outplay teams in order to get any success. And as they've got this bigger, stronger pack, they've lent on it. And I think that is at the expense of more expansive rugby.
I don't think 5 years. I'm not sure 5 years. I think 2 years ago, they were pretty devastating in attack.
Yeah, two years ago, AJ and Faf were looking awesome and creating stuff outside them.
That is true, yeah, that is true. I always think of the sort of shapes and patterns that they played when Deacon first arrived. You know, they were relying very heavily on what Deacon did. But then you talk about the days of Mike Haley there. I mean, that's how far back that I'm thinking. And as I've got more abrasive as a team, I mean, they do play nice rugby when they're on the front foot. But if you take that away from them, you know, all of a sudden they start to struggle. And I think that's exactly what we saw, which is a shame. Now, just to put this into context, I think there are some reasonable excuses. Although they've stayed, broadly speaking, the same standard of team, you've got to contextualise that in that Sanderson's taken over. He has now got to manage a salary cap and transition from the diamond style team into what he wants. So to keep that sort of steady, you could kind of argue is almost like a progress. They're going to have to work out what they're going to do with all the South Africans because a lot of them need to go.
Lude and Faf are going to be announced as leaving in the next 72 hours, apparently, according to the rugby paper. And that would tally up with the rumours.
Yeah, and that doesn't surprise. I mean, I've been talking about that, the potential for that to happen for a long time.
And Van Rensburg. Who, by the way, when we were talking about Rowan Yanzi Van Rensburg as a potential England centre, the new residency laws only work for, as in changing back to a nationality, or changing to a nationality, only work if by parentage or grandparentage.
Good.
Not residency. So yeah, that isn't an option.
Right. Good. Yeah. So he'll go. So, you know, they're trying to move from one set of players to the next. And, you know, I guess from that point of view, to stay in the top four race and move from a World Cup winner to a kid at scrum half, for instance, is actually quite a success. Obviously, they're blooding the two new wingers who at the start of the season look like they don't have a clue.
Well, they've got O'Flaherty coming in anyway.
Yeah, they've got O'Flaherty coming in. But, you know, if you look at the improvement in Aaron Reid, I honestly did not think he'd make it as a professional rugby player. Certainly not at Sale Sharks at the start of the season. I thought this kid's just not, he's fast, but isn't Premiership standard. I don't think that anymore. I think Roebuck's the real deal. So there are some good things happening. Oh, I certainly earned the other one. And I can't really give much credit to Sale for this because they had him basically out the door not so long ago. But how good is Ewan Ashman at the moment?
Mm-hmm. He does look
very good. Ewan Ashman is looking superb, but that happens to be because of injury, and then they brought him back from his one day loan at Edinburgh.
Do you know what I'm going to call it? I'm going to call it that Sale don't deserve any more chat on this episode of the podcast because they're out of the race now. They've got nothing to play for the season in the Premiership at least. So we shouldn't labour the chat on Sale right now.
I was going to say, I think there's two moments from this game that are worthy of chat. They're not really Sale moments. They're Saracens moments. And it's the two decisions that went in Saracens' favour, let's put it that way.
Yes.
With one being the Max Malin's pass for the second Ben Earl try, which, my view, that is a forward pass.
Agreed.
Shouldn't have stood. He releases the ball before, was it the 22? Before the line. It bounces over the 22, releases it a metre one side, it bounces a metre the other side. That is a forward pass.
Yeah.
Even accounting for the momentum and...
Yes, yeah. Even accounting for the momentum. He's not moving that fast. And the ball hardly travelled anywhere. It only went a few metres because it was a terrible pass. So yeah, that try should have been disallowed. Although Luke James, playing 15... was lucky that Ben Earl scored it, because if Ben Earl drops that ball, he's getting a red card and it's a penalty try.
I thought that. It's
a no-arm tackle, and there's contact with the chest and or head neck area at the same time.
I could have blamed Ben Earl for it in a way.
Why?
Because if you watch the way Ben Earl... Watch how the contact is instigated. Usually a tackle like that is quite a malicious thing instigated by the defender. But this contact comes off exactly as Ben Earl wanted and expected it to. So he's got the ball. He's like, okay, I'm going to now run over one of the James Brooke brothers. Steps off his foot and just ploughs into them. And the reason the tackle was so bad is because Ben Earl's decided to plough into this guy when he's upright. I think Ben Earl decided to go around the edge of him. there would be no tackle. There was no interest in making that tackle. Ben Earl can go around him. He's not going to get the tackle. And Sam's going to stand straight up. Or he's going to run into him and Sam is going to stand straight up. He did not want to make the tackle. And that's why it was such a horrendous tackle.
Two questions. One, I did think this after seeing Saracens at the Tottenham Stadium last weekend. But it occurred to me again on Friday night. Is Ben Earl the ultimate rugby CrossFitter? He'd be the best. He's a potential CrossFit Games champion, Ben Earl.
Yeah, you know, him or Sam Simmons, right?
I think Ben Earl, his engine is unreal, and he is just a bull. And he's so explosive.
So is Sam Simmons. I think they're the same person.
They're so similar, the way that they play.
Yeah.
I reckon Ben Earl's got more of an engine than Sam Simmons. That's not to degrade Sam Simmons. He's a very fit guy. But I think his bleep test score would be off the scale as well as being all the other things.
I'm not saying you're wrong, Tim. But to find out if Ben Earl was fit and Sam Simmons, we'd be waiting a bloody long time.
It's true.
A long time. 680 swings into it.
And the other thing is, let's say for argument's sake, Ben Earl, they were checking whether Ben Earl had grounded it because the illegal hit from Luke James had dislodged the ball somewhat. Let's say they were checking that. What would the decision have been if the grounding hadn't happened? Would you go red card penalty strike, and if they'd also looked at the forward pass at the same time? How would you... Could you give a red card for something and not give a try because of an earlier forward pass?
I think that's what would probably happen if they looked at the pass as well.
That's a great question. That is a great question, isn't it? So the forward pass, well, that is forward. So as far as I'm concerned, everything else after that doesn't count unless it's serious foul play.
Yes. So you can't score a try after that, but you can get a red card after that.
Yes,
yeah, so
red card, scrum sale. Ooh, what a mess. So let's just talk about that. Go on.
I was going to say, the other incident.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The Vincent Cock, Alan Davis, three-way no-arm tackle on Faf de Klerk. What was your views on that?
I knew what would be going on Twitter. So just as like rubbernecking at an accident, driving past on the other carriage on the motorway, I did just go on and just look and like, oh yeah, that's what happens when an incident like this happens. Oh, look at Twitter doing what Twitter does. So I just had a look at it from afar, didn't contribute. But if I had been contributing, I'm not as angry as many people were. Because I do have a little bit of empathy for the fact that it's quite hard to get out of the way. But I can understand why people were upset that it was penalty only as well.
I'm fine with it being penalty only.
I kind of am. Because if you're running full pelt across the pitch, what else could he have done?
So I actually think that neither Vincent Cock nor Alan Davis is actually going to collide until the two of those collide. Neither one of the Saracens players is going to collide with Faf until the two of them both collide together. And that's what forces them to... Alan Davis is the one who makes the main contact with Faf. So for me, it is just a rugby incident. They're both trying to avoid him and unfortunately clatter him. That's my take on
it. How dare you say that, Phil? You just don't care about player welfare.
I mean, Alan Davis, it's his back that hits Faf. It's not like he's going in with a chicken wing or a shoulder. It's his back. He's trying to get out of the way, but he runs into Vincent Cock.
And that's
he's
the coaching
half
point.
The weight.
As I said to the under-14s this morning, right, coaching point, lads. When you're tackling, just jump into someone, but turn your back, and then fair game.
How do you coach the legal high tackle to your lads, Tim?
relentlessly. It takes a lot of practice to get it right.
And do you also teach defensive high tackling too? So you basically get another lad to high tackle one of your players, and then you train him to hold his head and then wave.
Yeah,
and nod
what's really important is training them, and we do a lot of work on the making it look like your neck has snapped back.
Yeah,
really, really. And then, obviously, falling straight to the floor as quick as possible.
That's a real pro tip. And hold and hold your head. But then if you want to really get to the next level, you need support play. So then all the other players got to run towards the ref, waving the imaginary card.
Yeah.
Or
have you been like watching our drills on a Wednesday night, Jay?
Oh yeah. Lads, this is a no ball session. No balls will be needed.
So as a neutral, JB, did you agree with Phil? And I'm broadly with Phil, actually.
Yeah, pretty much. Rugby incident. I mean, just, you know, it's fine. It's fine. I mean, it's not fine. I mean, it's not consistent, but I'd rather the game be going in this direction than, you know, the way that we've had it recently.
Good. Well, I mean, again, Twitter would disagree, but Twitter's Twitter.
Yeah, I haven't tweeted for like 2 weeks now.
How do you feel?
Do you know, I've been so creative. It's bizarre. I've been incredibly productive in work. Yeah, it's good. I'm much, much less connected to rugby. But that's Twitter rugby. It's not the same thing. I did dive in a little bit today. Someone sent me a tweet. And I think we might have to discuss it later, actually, when we do our No Woman, No Try review. But it really riled me. I thought, I don't need to do this. Do you know, this is a serious point. A really serious point. Rugby would be a better sport if the first thing the new CEO of Premiership Rugby did was tell all the clubs to come off Twitter. Come off it. It'd just be better because it's not real life. That's not who their fans are. Their fans are not on rugby. Sorry, not on rugby. I'm not on Twitter. They're just not there. They're people like my dad and, you know, people who just do not care. In fact, the majority of people my age are not on Twitter. Who love rugby, so it's just not a thing they should be pandering to.
Agreed.
No disagreement here.
Now, as a neutral, let's just talk about Saracens a bit, because we've said they were good and whatnot, but I think this has shown a real maturity to what they do. They were so street smart, and I think that, I mean, they're definitely a softer team to the one that last played in the Premiership, because they're missing so many players. But the experience is there, the street smarts is there, and when Sale were on top, and they were on top big time for the first half, in the first half, there was no sign of panic. Right, they could handle everything, and they also have an incredible wind-up factor. Atoji, yeah, we all know that. Sam Tompkins was operating on a different level of being a menace.
Nick Tompkins.
Yeah,
close enough.
Yes, they're all the same, aren't they?
He was pretty niggly and on a few occasions.
Well, yeah, he's the reason that Sale lost down, or one of reasons that he lost at the Stone X or Stonehenge or whatever it's called stadium now, because he got Byron sent off by Byron.
I forgot about
mild-mannered choir boy Byron doesn't do things like that.
But anyone that stood in for Phil on this podcast can do no wrong, and Byron never does.
Byron can't do any wrong.
Absolutely.
It is what it is.
What are the games? So there's the Saturday game and the Sunday game. They were pretty entertaining.
Well, come on. We need to talk about Bristol, because what a car crash. Their whole week has been a car crash. Have you heard about the salary cap? The supposed salary cap nightmare that they're about to incur.
No.
Yeah, they're looking to try and offload Semi is the latest.
Oh, the irony. As they should, by the way. I've been saying this for a long time now. Maybe the most overrated player in the Premiership for the price that they pay, he's got to go. I mean, he's just not worth the money. He's not worth...
I don't think he's been fit all season.
I just don't... Maybe... But he got a card this week. He had a turnover. He has so many turnovers, so many mistakes. I'm not even sure he's the best 13 in the league. And for the money, he should be comfortably the best 13 in the league. In fact, I think most teams have a better 13 than he does. I mean, I think Gloucester do. I think Exeter do.
If fit and firing, I couldn't disagree more that I think he's the best 13 in the world. But
You can't seriously think that. I mean, I think Curtis Rona in the Premiership is better than him this year. I think.
Oh, this year, yes. But what I'm saying to you is, I think he's been carrying injuries and hasn't trained properly all year.
Has he been the best 13 at any time during his best 13 in the Premiership at any time in his stint at Bristol?
Probably his first season.
Yeah.
Last season when they got to the playoffs.
When they finished top of the league.
He was amazing. When they won the European Cup, the Challenge Cup. Yeah. He was.
They were all playing well then.
He was incredible then.
I think he has amazing moments. I think he probably has some of the best moments in world rugby. But that isn't rugby. Rugby is an 80-minute game. You've got to be consistent throughout it. And I think that's what they've done. They've bought a guy based on his highlights. And I would have half the outside centres in the league that start over him. Simple as that.
I don't disagree with that on a salary cap perspective, but a fit semi, I'd start him every time.
Yeah,
I think every club team in the world would do.
And I think fit, when he was playing his best rugby 2-3 years ago, he was, I'd probably agree with him, he's pretty much the best 13 in the world.
I don't know, where is this coming from? Because it's not coming from his Bristol performances.
The two seasons I've just mentioned where Bristol got to the final, well, won European Cup and got to the semi-final of the
league. And finished top of the table.
Finished top of the league. And also, if you watch some of his performances for Fiji and in the 2019 World Cup, he's outrageous. He does things that other players just cannot do.
I don't disagree on that. I don't disagree he can do extraordinary things. But rugby's about now, isn't it? And that's the art of the salary cap.
And the salary cap, the issue is they've got promising players like Antoine Frisch who they might end up losing because they can't offer him a deal to keep him.
But he'll be on 1/10 of what Semi's on.
Yeah. And almost as good. Do you know why they're in this situation?
Bad decision making.
Well, allegedly, as I understand it, they missed a date when all the extensions automatically kick in. So they've got a date where if they don't say they don't want a player, so if you've got on a 2+1, that +1 kicks in after a date. So they've got to say, look, we don't want you. Or they automatically pick it up and they picked up a load of deals, which they don't necessarily want. So now they've got to trim the salary cap from other players. Disaster, you might say. Which is so stupid because Pat Lamb, I'm starting to think of Pat Lamb now. Maybe he should spend more time focusing on rugby and less time focusing on love. But he actually did an interview where he said the salary cap is easy to work to if you have good systems and processes. I don't think putting a date in the diary of when all of your contracts extend automatically is really beyond the wit of man. I think how serious would you consider that factor, Phil, if you were managing a salary cap?
Well, I wouldn't want a contract that automatically rolls over. I would want it opt in rather than opt out. So the status quo is it expires unless I push the button for it to continue.
Wait a second. Are you sure you want that?
Yes, because I'm going to have the date in my diary. But yeah, I'd prefer that.
No. Let's say for some reason it's beyond you. I mean, obviously you manage multi-million-pound projects and whatnot, but it's beyond you to put a single date in a paper diary which says you need to make some big decisions now or your team's wrecked. Would you rather lose 5 first-team players or keep 5 first-team players?
Depends who they are.
No, I'm just your average players. Just say Mr. Ravage. Let's pick Mr. Ravage. 5 Pierce O'Connors, would you rather keep them or lose them?
Piers O'Connor, so he's a bad example because he's cheap. So he's not he's cheap but very good. He's not the average Bristol player.
No, that is the average Bristol player. The average Bristol player is very cheap and very good. And then you've got 5 extortionately expensive players.
I'd go for like an Ed Holmes and an Ed Holmes, like your fourth choice. Your fourth choice in a position.
So guys who are very cheap like that, yes, I'd want to keep. But if I've got 30 of them, or I've got 40 of them, losing 5 of them is not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think happened? Do you think the diary just stuck together? Do you think he just turned it over and he missed a week?
I can't imagine
how this happens.
Well, yeah, and you'd think there'd be some infrastructure and organisation that would prevent that from happening, if indeed that is what happened?
If indeed, we don't know. We're just speculating. But, you know, bearing in mind that the owner owns one of the largest financial services firms in the entire UK, if not the largest, I would expect their systems and processes to be fairly nailed down.
Well, they got absolutely pumped again. Pat Lam was not happy with the yellow card decisions. I don't think any card decisions would have made a single difference to the result here. So he may have a point on the cards. And I think Dan Bigger was very lucky not to see some colourful cards sent his way for some kind of just arms totally out of control. So I kind of sympathise with him on that. But the result was never in doubt. They got pumped.
Pat Lam needs to show some contrition and shut up. He needs to shut about cards. He needs to shut about anything to do with any controversy whatsoever until he starts winning. If he is winning, he can talk about cards all day long. He doesn't have the right to talk about cards. His team are terrible. His team are terrible, and he spends an absolute fortune on these lads. He spends a fortune on the wrong lads, and now he's got to. And now he's got to get rid of them. This week has just been another example of Bristol falling down. The contract that they've given him is absolutely ludicrous. I mean, I believe I said it. The worst day for Pat Lam in Bristol was the day that he signed that contract. 7 more years of this absolute lunacy.
Well, it's great. Great for him because.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, who's laughing all the way to? I mean, no wonder he talks about love so much. I mean, with that amount of money.
Look at Jose Mourinho, who every time 4 or 5 year deal for £5 million a year. And sees 2 years out and then gets bought out of his contract. That might be Pat's play here.
Who would buy him?
Bristol pay him to leave. So no other clubs coming in.
Maybe that's it. I'll talk out of school a little bit. I believe that Bristol are not particularly happy with him. I believe that there's turmoil right at the top as to what do they do with Pat Lam. And there should be. What are they on? 5 wins or 6 wins for the season?
6, I think.
Not acceptable. Not even close to being acceptable.
Yeah, six out of 20.
It's been a disaster. Absolute disaster. Now, I don't know what I would do in Bristol's situation because I guess money's not a big deal for Bristol and coaches' salaries are outside of the salary cap. So you can fire him. It's not going to have a big deal. Impact on you. I'm genuinely torn now whether you try give him another season or is the damage just done?
No, of course you do.
I don't.
Of course you do. What's this footballification of rugby going on? Just because calm down. He won them he won them their first ever European, the first ever like major trophy. Yeah, and finished top of the Premiership last season. Just calm down a little bit.
You have to show me the mitigating circumstances here. So you've got to say, like, okay, and injuries are not acceptable. Injuries, squad availability, not acceptable because that's how you build your squad. So if you can't get around that.
There are none. He's had a bad year, but he's proven he's great. So we'll look to next year. There you go.
He's proven done. That he can win with a better team than everybody else's. But after the salary cap reduction from COVID, this league has got much more competitive. And I think his style has been shown up. And I'm all for trying different styles. I massively respect anyone who decides to go for 4 forwards, 4 backs, or you know, focus on attack rather than defence, trying something new. I'm all for that, and it worked for a little while. This year, when the heat has been turned up on him, it has failed miserably.
I don't disagree. I'm only disagreeing with the being too reactionary and going, he's had a bad season, therefore you're gone. I'm not into that at all.
No, yeah. But then again, you know, the interactions he's had lately, whether it be the Tempest stuff or various other things, it leads me to think that he's not, for all the stuff he says, I don't think his character backs it up. And that's, in my mind, even more damaging.
You leap to Diamond's defence on every indiscretion of his.
The man's a saint. The man's a hero to the Northwest and to the working man of Salford. How dare you compare the two?
I like Pat Lam and I like Steve Diamond a lot.
Can I just say, Diamond never has Diamond ever lectured you about love and brotherhood?
No, but he's
no. So he can do what he wants.
He's tried to very much get one over on me in interviews.
Yeah, but literally, that is his persona. Like he would never tell you, look, Tim, I'm not, you know, Tim, you're my brother. I love you. I would never do that. Like if that was the case, I would come down like a ton of bricks on diamond. In fact, I'd come down on a ton of bricks like diamond if he started talking in that way, because then he is disingenuous. It's the disingenuous nature of Pat Lam which really gets me riled up. Because, you know, why is he blaming cards? Control your controllables, Pat. What can you do to control the cards? And yet here he is whinging about it like he's a child. Like, you've got the biggest budget, well, the joint biggest budget with all of the 13 clubs. you've got a great support structure. You've had everything you've wanted at Bristol. Don't tell me about cards. I'm not interested.
So I'd agree with quite a lot of that, as in the whinging about cards and the hypocrisy of the love and his actions not displaying his words. Let's say that.
Agreed.
I wouldn't get rid of him immediately. And one of the reasons, Jay, you mentioned that he's only won with the best team in the league. He didn't do that with Connacht.
Yeah, I did.
The reason why he got a whatever the figure is, £800,000 or whatever, he's allegedly the best paid coach in the world or one of the best paid coaches in the world. The reason he's got that is because he achieved something that was totally miraculous in winning the league, whatever it was called then, Pro 14, Pro 16, Rainbow Cup with Connacht, which is an unbelievable achievement.
Do you know what? You are right. You are 100% right on that.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
And that's a positive point to depart from Bristol and just chuck a bit of phrase Saints' way. We've already said they're back in the mix and they're fizzing. And Rory Hutchinson, I love seeing him playing how he did 2 years ago, as he has been for a while now. And that seems to have coincided with Northampton being much more fluent. He is just a Rolls Royce of a player when he's on song.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned him, Tim, because I actually forgot about him. And do you know when we were talking about Semi before? And this is not about Semi, but we said, didn't we, he has moments of magic, just unbelievable, you know, can do just unbelievable stuff. Well, I think the best bit about Hutchinson is everything he does is so simple, but looks so great. Like, he didn't do anything particularly amazing for either of those tries. It was a break, but it was just so smooth. He makes basic things look amazing.
Oh, I'd actually almost say it was the other way around, because those things, he made them look like they were easy. But the timing of his runs, particularly for the first one, for the Collins try, his break off the line out for the Collins try, off front ball, off attacking front ball of the line out, that the timing of that run and the angle of that run was absolutely magnificent. He made it look like it was just easy. He was just picking a line, but it was a lot more than that.
Yeah, and when he's on song, I think, that's what I was thinking, actually. You reminded me of actually watching the game now and what I was going through, which is, he's amazing with a bit of space. And I wonder if the last couple of years, he's not been good at all. Well, not good at all, but he's not been nearly as effective. Because it's not that he doesn't have this, it's not that there's not a little bit of space. It's that there is literally no space in Premiership defences. So if you're Saints and you don't really have a running game to get over the game line, Hutchinson isn't your boy. I would love to see him play behind maybe the Exeter pack of a few years ago, or the Saracens pack right now, or Bath, someone that can get over the game line. Because I think all of a sudden he might be one of the best players in the Premiership if they got the go forward.
He's got to be looked at back in a Scotland shirt the way he's playing. Yeah. Whether he played 12 for Scotland, whether he plays 13, he played a game at 15, didn't he? But just get him on the park, because his running is so good.
Can he stop playing, and can Nick Tompkins stop playing for the next 3 years, please? Just for the next World Cup cycle, please. lads, come on.
Is it that desperate?
It's not far off, mate.
No, Jomo is going to be the boy.
Yeah,
Jomo is the boy. He's just the boy.
Yeah, next World Cup cycle. Yeah.
So, well done to Northampton.
Yes.
Just one thing on Northampton. Something that's really irritating me. The England captain, we're fond of him on this podcast. Can we stop talking about the development of his game? He's the England captain now. There is no more development to be done. Like, we know he's been good. He's been good for, what, 4 years now?
More than that as well. Starting British and Irish Lion only 9 months ago. Well, not even that.
9 months ago and 4 years ago and 4 years before that. The development's done, boys. It is done. I don't want to hear any more about the development of Courtney Laws. He's just a world-class player. Leave it be.
He is that. Love courts.
Yeah, I love the Ludlam try as well.
Yes, although, yeah.
Actually, I don't want to moan about Bristol anymore, because I think, JB, you've got that nicely covered.
You have, actually.
But some of their defence for some of the Northampton tries, Lewis Ludlam try included, it was great yak and leg drive from Ludlam. But come on, guys. Come on.
I actually have a bit of sympathy for that, because the commentator said, he's just taken three lads over the try line. I was like, but that's what he does. It's inexplicable how he does it, but that is what he does. Like,
just take his legs, tackle low.
I don't think it's possible. I don't think it's possible. I think many people have tried. Like, when he's in the 22 and you see him stepping back, you know there's danger. You just know before it happens, somebody's going to get hurt or run over, or he'll run at a certain pace or angle or timing where, for whatever reason, you can't touch his legs. I don't know. You just got to take him back. Much like, I think what happened to Sam James happens to other players when they see Lewis Ludlam run, which is they just freeze. They freeze in the headlights. And then before you know it, he's on you. Then you've got to make a decision. And the only decision you can do is make a tackle high as he drags you over the try line.
Try to hold on.
Yeah, for dear life.
I'm going to jump to a couple of emails just to segue between games. Christopher Barton's got in touch. Oh, sorry, Nick. Not Christopher Barton at all. Anyway, it's Nick. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com. He says, I was watching some French rugby on Sunday night. I do love that 8 p.m. Sunday kickoff to round off the weekend. Anyway, hot tubs. The French were in the ground in hot tubs watching the game. I did some Googling and found Newcastle once tried it. Bit chillier than it is in France. Would you like to watch a game from a hot tub?
So when I was in Durban and I watched the Sharks versus the Jaguares, there were hot tubs behind the in-goal area, definitely on one side. Unfortunately, I didn't get to partake in them. But yeah, of course I'd watch in the hot tub.
I mean, I would do everything in a hot tub if I had the choice, really. Meetings, christenings. Christenings actually would be remarkably suitable for hot tubs, bearing in mind what they are.
Dual purpose.
Dual purpose, yeah. holy hot tubs.
Holy water hot tub.
Hey, I mean, the church needs a boost in pop popularity. This could be it. This genuinely could be it.
I've got another military-based one here as well.
Oh, yes, please.
Jacob Barr. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com. He says, hi, gents. Seeing as you enjoy talking about the club game, I thought I'd let you know about some interregimental rugby in the army.
Yes, please.
See, Wednesday afternoon sport is always special, whether it was school, university or whatever. There's something special about Wednesday afternoon sport, isn't it? And the 29 Regiment RLC went away to one Lancs. So got on the coach at 8:30 to travel just outside of Chester. A cup quarter final and spirits were high. They dashed early, though, as one Lank scored quickly. Anyway, it went back and forth. The halftime team talk was honest, to say the least, and Captain Sergeant Major Corduroy spoke of the team playing our game and restoring some pride and the team being able to leave with their heads held high. I'm just scanning through an amazing match report. I wish we had time to talk about all of it. 38-34 it was, with 3 minutes to go. 29 RLC gathered the kickoff, marched up the field, and in the last play of the game, what does PTE stand for in military?
No idea. But this is how they talk, though. You've got to understand this. So they talk only in acronyms.
Yeah. Well, PTE, whatever that stands for, Bulls, 29 Stone, Talismanic Fijian Centre, Crikey.
29 RLCs, talismanic Fijian centre.
Oh, right. Yes. Not 20. 20. Thank you, Phil. 29 stone centre. What? Picked up the ball from his feet and powered over the line for the winning score, sending the 29 RLC bench barmy. A superb game. 39-38. One of the best comebacks he's ever seen. Post-match, the two teams came together for a song in Fijian and a prayer. A truly special occasion and one I will not forget in a hurry. 29 RLC now march into the semi-finals and are hoping another miracle is required.
Timothy. So PTE, acronym. Okay, so here are the first four I've got.
Yeah.
Pearson Test of English.
Okay. No.
No. Patronus Amtrak Station. Nope.
Nope.
Post-traumatic epilepsy. Possible. I'm not saying,
hopefully not.
I'm not ruling it out, though. Passenger Terminal Expo. Not sure about that one. So 59 more rows. Number five, PTE, private military rank.
That there you go. Be- private bulls of the 29s. A private bull scored the winning try, which took them from a 38-22 down to a 39-38 win. Thank you, Lieutenant Jacob Barr. Long-time listener of the pod. Thank you for your service. Congratulations on your win. Good luck in the semi-finals.
Absolutely.
Go well, boys.
And also, just it's been brought to our attention, lots of stuff. The Spain thing is rumbling on now. Spain's Rugby World Cup place in jeopardy.
So I would have thought Vladimir Putin had better things to do than this. But it seems like they're going to be... It seems like this thing has got legs and I just don't have a good feeling about it.
So is it, I've not really followed this story, is it the same mistake again from a headline I think I read?
Yes.
As in ineligible or potentially ineligible player?
Yeah, a brief summary from Asbel, who is a listener. He's a maths teacher living in Cambridge and a Spaniard. contactedchases@gmail.com. And he said he's just summarised that World Rugby have started an investigation against Spanish Rugby Union for the eligibility of one of the Spanish players. Mm. It's a major risk for our presence in Spain for Spain in the Rugby World Cup. Is that the Belgium ghost striking again? Do we always need to be on the spot of international rugby in terms of qualification for World Cups? That is the question all Spanish fans have in their heads at the moment. The formal complaint was made by the Romanian Rugby Union about a possible breach of rule number 8. That's a regulation about the eligibility of players. And after a deep investigation, found about the facts and talked with some people at the clubs to check the match reports, the player definitely is eligible to play for Spain. So, Asbel says.
Is or isn't?
Is. He claims.
Oh, God. Hey, can I just go back to military rugby for a second?
Yeah, of course. Mm.
So, let me get this right. 30th of July, 2022. So, 30th of July this year. It is Armed Forces Legends versus Welsh Charity Legends at Plymouth Albion. And I am trying to weasel my way into getting a game for this, but I can't really work out which one I fit into. I definitely can't play for Armed Forces because that's basically stolen valor. I may as well show up with a fake Victoria Cross if I'm going to do that. And SAS wings. And I don't really want to play for Welsh Charity Vets, I don't think, because I'm not exactly... I mean, it'd be an honour and all the rest of it. I'm not exactly being kind to Welsh rugby of late. So I might just have to go down and watch, which would be upsetting.
And who do you support?
Oh, Armed Forces, I think.
Armed Forces.
Yeah, I'm pretty certain. But at Plymouth Albion. More importantly, I can go for a weekend and have a few beers with a couple of friends that I want to catch up with and hopefully go sailing in Newquay as well.
Bentos.
Exactly. So it should be good. But talking of which, we may as well get into that now. Guess who won a game this week?
Plymouth Albion.
Bittersweet. Against Hugo Watson's very own, I can't remember the name, Tunbridge
Juddians.
Juddians.
Yeah. Yeah, which kind of devastating. When they've had a miserable season. I think they're going to be happy for it to end and be able to rebuild again.
Now, now Richmond got handily put to the sword by a very good Ealing side who were cracking the champagne and lifting their trophy, still with a very, very faint hope of being in the Premiership next season in the back of their mind. But even in defeat, guess who scored a try for Richmond?
Would it be Mark Bright?
Correct, making it, which kept, he maintained his position as the equal top try scorer at the age of 43. And as was pointed out by some of our listeners, clearly the Daily Telegraph rugby writers listen to the podcast because
they do.
They've started paying attention to Mark Bright, and there was a lovely piece about the 43-year-old evergreen number eight in the Telegraph this week.
Who wrote it? Do you know?
I'd have to check.
It wasn't rugby's greatest journalist, who was Charlie Morgan, no?
Couldn't say. I don't know.
Okay. Well, whilst on this, my boys, not your boys, Tim, Aylesbury, smashed Thatcham 44-7, which makes them, unbelievably, or quite believably, unbeaten at home all year, which is cute because Toc H are just unbeaten. But, you know, unbeaten at home is good as well, isn't it?
Didn't you lose to Widnes in the Cup?
Not in the league, though.
So you're unbeaten in the league?
In the league. See, Aylesbury don't have to add caveats to their home.
Well, at home.
Undefeated home record.
Apart from the home caveat.
Oh, I mean, that's... just let me see what else happened. So, it looks like, to me, Colney and Salem are going to go up into the Championship. That's going to be pretty cool for Northwest Rugby. I mean, that's going to be...
The Colney Ravers.
So, I would love a situation where Bath went down and Sale FC went up, and Sale FC were the ones beating Bath rather than Sale Sharks. That would fill me with joy. And Colney, actually. But there's going to be a lot of high-level rugby in the Northwest if those two teams go up.
Can they both go up? Will it not be one up, one down?
It's only one up, one down, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is. It's one up, none down, because...
And to be honest, I have been sent the proposals for the promotion, relegation and whatnot. I've not paid much attention to it. I'll pay attention to it once it actually happens.
Yeah,
because it's all sort of restructured.
Yeah, they're just proposals at the moment. It's not fixed, is it?
Yeah. But Colney only just sweep past Roslyn Park away, who are currently... third now, which is why I say I'll, jump up to second, which is pretty cool. Sorry, Phil. Essentially, seems to be losing quite a bit of ground in the in National North 1, or whatever it's called. National North 2, is it? National 2 North.
National 2 North.
Is the game last week narrowly losing away at Hull. But winning only just against Chester this week. That's quite a good result.
It is a good result. Mind you, Chester off. Thoroughly in the table.
Yeah.
You've not been to Seasedge, mind you. Do you know how many points that they've scored? So, by the way, it's a 16-team league, so it's not as, it's not a huge, it is an achievement, but do you know how many teams, how many points that they've scored?
I don't know.
97?
The third place team.
Points. Oh, I see. Points, as in tries. Points. Oh, tries
league
and
league points.
No. No, you're right, Tim. Your personalization was right. The third place team in that league, 103.3 league points.
Is that Sedgley in third?
Yeah, that's a lot of points. That's a lot of winning this season in a 16-team league.
Well, it's 16 teams, so that means 30 games, which means they've only played like 25 or 26 games, haven't they? Yeah, still got 5 weeks of rugby left.
So I've got an interesting little dit for you. I was talking to the Widnes lads after we played them last week, right? And one of the things I said is I'm really looking forward to their game against Broughton Park. So Broughton Park are due to play Widnes, and it's a really good test. It's Broughton Park level 6. Widnes are in this alternative league structure, which Toc H are in, and I think Widnes are a cracking team, and I'd like to see how they went against Broughton Park to see roughly where the levels are. Anyway, Broughton Park have pulled out the cup, which I think is abysmal for a club of that stature and that history.
But Worcester had their reasons for not playing a Premiership game.
Totally different. Now, this isn't about Brokenbach. It isn't for me to be derogatory about them. It's about something else, actually, which is the effect of the cup competitions at that level of rugby. So Brokenbach pulled out simply because they do not have any free weekends, not for anything malicious. It's not because they want a free weekend or they're going skiing. They just don't have any weekends to play it. Now, all the other teams in the Northwest who are sort of like level five, you never see them in cups. And allegedly, the reason you never see them in cups is because, well, they decided not to enter them in the first place. But if they were to enter them, they wouldn't pay their players to play a cup game, but only in league games. So they don't see the point in doing it because they've got this weird semi-pro structure. You don't see people like Rosendale or... I've never seen Sedgley Park in a cup. Have you ever played in a cup, Phil?
Yeah, we used to play Lancashire Cup. We won it a few times going back when I was playing.
Preston, but... now I haven't actually looked into this any further, and I don't know if this is just people saying things about clubs that pay money because they're bitter that they can't pay money, or if it's true. But anecdotally, I don't remember seeing any of the Northern Premiership teams. The Northern Premiership teams playing like the Level 6 Cup or the Level 5 Cup at all, really.
It used to be, if I remember rightly, there used to be kind of two cups, and this is going back like 10 years, but there used to be a cup A and cup B, or a trophy and a plate, or whatever you want to call them, and Sedgley and Preston and Fylde and the others would play in the cup A, Lancashire cup A, with only, Liverpool, St. Helens and a few others, and then everyone else would play in the lower cup, the cup B.
And remember, like you might be looking out for clubs like Stockport and Macclesfield and stuff, but they're in Cheshire.
Yeah, exactly.
They're Cheshire, not Lancashire.
Yeah, so they'd be in the Cheshire Cup.
Yeah, I remember seeing you play Sedgley versus LSH on a Friday night. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, if I think cup competitions at lower league rugby should be scrapped, or everyone is forced to go into them and has to play them. I don't think there should be a situation where Top 8 are in two cups this year and it's all the same teams, but the fun of the cup is you play Preston or you play Bolton Park or you play whoever it is, someone in the league below you. That's the point of the cup. It's not to play the same people in your league over and over again.
No, it should be about the stories and the potential giant killing.
Yeah. So I think Widnes are going to... By the way, I'm sure our worldwide audience cannot wait to hear more about Widnes. They might get to a cup final after only playing one game, which is just, what is the point?
It's been a strange old year.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I don't think this is COVID related. This is just bad administration on cups.
Yeah, let's not go too much further into Widnes before we've mentioned Harlequins and London Irish, for example.
This was a good fun game. Not one to take too seriously, but a good fun game. Unfortunately, London Irish should have taken it more seriously.
Yeah, I've been talking about these last 2 weeks at the Brentford Community Stadium for about 3 months. I've been saying, Paddy's Day and then their big derby day against Quins when the weather's good and the grounds are firm. These are going to be ones you need to get down there. I'm glad I didn't take my own advice.
Yeah.
As someone who's slightly partial to London Irish, I mean, if you're a Quins fan going there, brilliant. I'm sure the atmosphere in general was great, but London Irish, what's happened?
Total implosion. Or is it an explosion? Which way do you think that London Irish have gone here?
Well, London Irish, they played some nice stuff, and the bounce of the ball, or they dropped the ball over the line twice. Curtis Rona gets held up over the line when he only has to beat Danny Kerr. And Curtis Rona also, I was sure he was going in at the corner when he had to beat Esterhazen into the corner. And he checked his run, presumably because Esterhazen was going to get him. I was certain he would have had the legs for that. But there are four tries, three that definitely should have been scored. The two balls knocked over the line, one from each winger. That should be 14 points. Curtis Rona should have gone over when Danny Kerr made an amazing tackle and he was then held up. That's 21 points. This could have been a totally, totally different game.
Yeah, I'm not sure it could be a totally different game, to be honest. I just don't think 14-41 lends itself to that.
London Irish, at the start of the season, I'm pretty sure I said are the worst coach team in the league because they didn't seem... I mean, they seem to be rubbish at structured rugby. And then they'd get a bit loose and they'd score a few tries and they had a few good... They didn't have many wins early doors, but they had a few draws against noticeable teams. And then about three or four games ago, they seemed to really hit their stride. All the big players were playing well. Their pack looked formidable. You know, the big money guys who played... Actually, did their locks play? Let me just check. Did the locks play? Simmons, George Knott. No, not both of them did. So that's always my sort of benchmark as will London Irish do well or the two big locks playing? If they are, they've got a chance. And they seem to thrive on this, you know, all guns blazing, attacking, unstructured type rugby. And then they seem to have gone backwards again. They started terribly. They got quite good. And now they seem to have gone back to what they were in at the beginning of the season.
It's never far off from that to that. Like you said, it can be a confidence thing or whatever. But they're now unbelievably in danger of not even being in the top eight. Quite legitimately, Wasps are very well placed to nick eighth spot off of London Irish, which would suddenly turn that. I mean, that would change the complexion of London Irish's season. We've even been saying in recent weeks, well, even if they don't make the top four, they'll be able to look at it and think we're in the right direction. Mm. They finished ninth, and you're back towards thinking, what a disappointing season for London Irish, which just goes to show how tight the margins are. But yeah, the wheels have just come off.
Mm. Yeah, it's pretty ominous for Irish.
Well, on Irish. On their performance, I was just going to say, on the performance, there were some lovely moments from Paddy Jackson and the guys outside him, some which resulted in tries, some which resulted in balls being knocked over the line. The frustration from Irish will be giving so many penalties away, particularly around the ruck, and not looking after their ball. And guys like Esther Hazen and Dom Brandt, who were both excellent over the ball, just... stealing at will, or stealing and/or winning penalties at will.
Yeah, I've spoken a lot about Irish. I have been very impressed with the Harlequins of late.
They've looked great.
Let me just see who got more tries today. Was it Caden Murley or was it Lewis Liner? And yes, I do know he didn't play. Caden Murley one try. Oh, Lewis Liner got subbed. So looks like again Caden Murley wins.
Liner came on late on, I think.
And then came off again for Northmore.
Yeah, he came on early doors for Northmore, but then came back on for someone else later. Might have even been Murley.
Yeah, so the latest victory for Caden Murley over Lewis Liner, again, in that on-running battle.
It's mad, isn't it? It's all about peaking at the right time, because Quins were having a wobble not so long ago, and they're, like you say, coming into form. And Northampton, we thought, were out of it, and are now very much back in it.
Yeah, it is the strength of the league.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And it's weird that, you know, I said before, didn't I, when I was going off on Pat Lam, I was saying, you know, he's got the wrong system for the wrong league and it's showing him up. It's probably not that much different to what Harlequins are trying to do, but they're getting it right. And small differences.
Yeah, and Quins... They're nine. Sorry, not their nines. They've got one amazing nine who is one of the best nines in the world at the moment. I think Healy said he's the second best behind DuPont at the moment, the way he's playing.
Oh, did you see the DuPont? Well, it's not his try.
Just outrageous.
But the try.
Yeah.
The guy's outrageous.
Ludicrous.
Let me make a break, then lie motionless underneath the ruck for at least 10 seconds.
More, yeah, 20 plus seconds.
Get up, look dizzy, make one pass, and then cross field kick it to score.
Yeah,
ridiculous. Incredible. He's a ridiculous human.
The Quins thing is that the way that they're set up. So obviously, everything is Marcus Smith. Everything goes through Marcus Smith until Marcus Smith is either subbed or playing for England or unavailable, and then whoever it is, be it Tomaso Allen or this week Will Edwards, and they just look. They just the team is set up in a way that. Whoever comes in can do the same thing. Like the Will Edwards pass for, was it Hugh Jones to score late on? It was straight out of the, it was almost identical actually to the Marcus Smith pass for Caden Murley's try. Just time it right so you just loop over the winger's fingertips. You suck in the winger so they think they can get an intercept. But as they go for it and leave the space outside, they realise they can't and your winger walks in. It's brilliant.
And also, just on Harlequins, some smart signings. I mean, I'm looking through actually who scored. Jack Walker scoring two tries. I thought one of the biggest mistakes that they made was letting Scott Baldwin walk. And it would turn out, I mean, I think Scott Baldwin was brilliant last year, but this year he's obviously left Worcester for personal reasons or whatnot. Those personal reasons would have been in existence whether he was at Worcester or at Harlequins. It turns out letting him go and bringing in Jack Walker, who came with quite a good reputation before coming to Bath, where reputations go to die, seems to relaunch his career. He looks great.
I don't know what it is about hookers, but I get things about hookers, and I've been telling you about Jack Walker for donkeys.
Yeah, well, he's very, very good.
He was England under 20s captain, wasn't he?
When they won the World Cup with that team with Harry Mallinder and I'm forgetting all the players that were in it now.
All of them, basically, Tim. All of them were in it. It's a very, very good team. Yeah, so I wonder if that has affected him, really, because if you're England under-21's captain and a hooker, presumably you're just waiting for your next big contract. Like, I wonder if you even think you need to prove it anymore. And then you get senior rugby and all of a sudden it's a massive shock because nobody's beating you up in the front row.
Ooh, I've got the team here, although I've only got last names of the team. But do you want me to read it out or do you want to have a few guesses?
Let's have a couple of guesses. Joe Marchant.
Joe Marchant is in there, 13, yes. Yeah. Very good.
Harry Mallinder. Harry Mallinder was 10.
Yeah, correct.
Randall.
There was that lad who went
JB Randall on the bench.
Oh, nice.
I'm aware.
There was that lad who was... he was a winger for Quins, and then he went to, I think he might have gone to Leicester, and he had a double-barreled name, and it was Asplund Robinson, that's the one.
Very good.
I don't even remember him. Well done, Tim. It's almost like you were match announcing or something. Almost.
I might have been. I wasn't at the final, but I was doing the ones at the City Stadium, not the ones at the AJ Bell.
Will Stewart, a bit young maybe.
So I've only got, this is on World Rugby's website, they only give last names, but Stewart is the tight head prop on the bench, so I'm going to assume that is Will Stewart.
It'd be amazing if it isn't. What about everyone's favourite player, Charlie Yules?
No.
Interesting.
No, not Charlie Yules.
Charlie Yules. I'm sure he captained a different England under 20s team.
It would stack up if he did. I don't know how it happened, but it would stack up. Johnny Hill. Nick Azikwe.
Oh, nice. No. Oh, Max Malins.
Malins was playing 15, yeah.
They
played Ireland in the final. And Stockers was his opposite number.
Oh, I like it.
It's hard to get a sort of this age rate. What about Mitchell?
Mitchell, the scrum half. Nope.
The number 8 was Callum Chick.
Correct. Well, very good.
Dingwell?
No, I think Dingwell's probably...
Will Evans?
Evans was playing 7. So again, assume that is Will Evans. Could be wrong.
I'm running out of road now.
Yeah, I don't know.
So I'll read the ones you've not got. So Boyce, assume Lewis Boyce.
Boycey!
Number 1. Singleton, assume Jack.
Yeah.
Which means that Walker was playing 3. So Jack Walker was playing tight head prop.
Wow.
Oh, interesting. Swing front row. I love that.
Yeah. I've never seen him do that in a professional
game. On your thing, George Klosker if you remember him for the Bristol hooker who got a man of the match on his debut in the Premiership, he's converting to tight head prop. And he played tight head prop the other night. Anyway.
Second rows were South and Taylor.
Oh, Harry, was it Stan South or Harry?
Stan South, yeah.
Stan South Harlequins.
Oh, nice. And
what was the other one?
Taylor.
Taylor. Not sure.
Don't know.
Nope.
Back row, you've mentioned two of them, Will Evans and Callum Chick, with George Knott at six.
Wow. Flanders knows George Knott.
Mm. You know that? Nine and ten. Green at nine.
Max Green, Leeds Carnegie, and then out Bath.
Okay. Malander at 10. Centres, Williams, which I assume is Johnny Williams, and Marchant, with Asplund, Robinson, Matt Gallagher, I assume, at 11, and Max Maylands at 15.
What has happened to Matt Gallagher?
He went to Munster, didn't he?
Yeah.
Tell you what, that is not a great team. I'm not going to lie to you.
And then the bench, Piper as the substitute hooker, West, which I assume is Ben West.
Yeah.
Will Stewart, one of the
not
Kitcheners.
Tom West.
Great family.
Kitchener's great family. A Willis, which is probably Jack, Randall, and then probably Max Wright and Ollie Thorley.
Yeah. Well, actually, you just mentioned name there, and I think I want to talk about them.
Go on.
Well, this is Gloucester's loss. What seems to be on face of it, a horrendous loss against Wasps. And you touched on it at the start of the podcast that this should be something that a game that Gloucester should win. And I agree with you. If Gloucester really wants to take top four seriously, they've got to beat Wasps at home. That's what I thought until I read the Wasps pack. So West, Gabriel, how do I say his name?
Ogre.
Allo, but then it goes Launchbury, Stook, Shields, Willis, Alfie Barbary. And I think, yeah, that's serious, actually.
And
Beater and Thomas on the bench.
Yeah. It's a handy pack, that. And they scored a pushover try, which is Gloucester's thing this year. Mm. And they almost scored another, which allowed Robson to feed Atkinson for his try. So surprisingly, Gloucester didn't have it all their own way up front, got Wasps the win.
I would say Wasps might have the biggest gap between their absolute best team and their average team, if that makes sense. So you take a few guys out there. You add Launchbury and Willis and Barbary into any pack and you're cooking with gas. I mean, they are such high quality operators. So it doesn't surprise me that much when I look at look at the names involved that they won. Now, that is to leave what I believe is one of the best forwards in the entire Premiership on the bench, which is Fifita. I think Fifita is a marvellous player. Now, you add them all into the mix. On their day, they can almost beat anyone. Fifita's are out off at the end of the year. But then if you take this pack and then get rid of Allo and replace him with Vincent Koch, bloody hell. Yeah, if they get the right balance of injuries and whatnot, they can go very, very far.
There's a lot of other clubs that would quite happily have, can we have Tom Willis and Thomas Young to start in our back row, please?
Yes, they would. Yes, they would. I don't even think Thomas Young made the team.
No.
Is he still injured?
I think he may be injured, but yeah. But regardless, they've got high quality players outside of they can't even get in the 15.
Semi Radranda, better or worse than Fekitoa?
This season, well, actually, Fekitoa has not played this season.
Fekitoa at his best, or Semi at his best?
Semi,
I'd have Semi.
Not even close.
That'd be a great 12. That'd be a great 12-13. That'd be a great 12 and 13 combo.
Right, so you've got choice of two Fekitoas. The current vintage Fekitoa, who atomizes people for fun and is okay going forward, or the young Fekitoa, who could run from any point in the pitch and score a try. No, not having it. Not having this one bit. Fekitoa.
I mean, you're spoiled for choice. That's two incredible, incredible players. If you pick them at their very best, they're both world-beating.
And Fekitoa, you've just described the two incarnations of Fekitoa. Randrandra at his best had both of those.
I disagree. Completely disagree. the only person I would like to see play against this Fekitoa is the old Fekitoa. I wonder if you could catch him. I wonder if you could smash him. Knows all his tricks, and they know each other's tricks. So both of them.
The only person you've got to ask is as to who's the better player at their peak is their bank managers.
There is one metric that never lies. Although, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Fekitoa. Where's Fekitoa been? Too long, as has Semi. I bet they both came over for some big money because Fekitoa came to replace Curtly Beale, did he not?
Who replaced Curtly Beale? No, because Willie LaRue replaced Curtly Beale.
Did Fekitoa replace?
But I think it's safe to say they both came over for a lot of money. I think we can agree that whoever they came for, regardless.
Yes.
Actually, I reckon Bordeaux were fairly generous with Semi's last pay packet.
To prize him away from Toulon, they might have been.
They might be to prize him away from Bordeaux, mustn't have been easy. Yeah. And then, so the question remains now, if Semi needs to leave Bristol, does Fekitoa get paid more in Munster or Fekitoa more in the top 14? Because I bet the Munster offer is enormous.
It would have to be. Yeah.
God, everything about this, I bet everything. The bank matchup is more interesting than the matchup.
I'm going to make a suggestion. We wrap up with the fixtures and then we have a separate women focused quick podcast.
Yeah, okay. Let's do that.
So fixtures next weekend. We're into Europe, aren't we?
Yeah, so Bristol lose. I've got that one nailed down. I don't really know the others. I can comment on the English teams.
It's the round of 16.
Yeah, so I guess let's beat Connacht. I guess I don't know about La Rochelle Bordeaux, no idea. Sale should beat Bristol Bears comfortably. Toulouse.
Are you going through? Let's go through. So on the Friday night, you've got Connacht Leinster in leg one. The Challenge Cup, Brieve Saracens, Edinburgh Pow, meh. That's fine. Be better, and then we'll talk about you in the Champions Cup. But Connacht Leinster is the fair on Friday night. On to Bordeaux La Rochelle, like you say. Sale Bristol. How do you see that one going?
I see Sale. This is Sale's realistically their last chance for silverware. And you've got to remember, they've got some pedigree in Europe because they only lost against finalist La Rochelle. Not because they were out-muscled, because they were out-emotioned. So providing they get their emotion right, I can't see any reason they don't breeze to the final. So an emotionally stable Sale should batter Bristol Bears, who are full of love, but not
two legs. It's two legs, which this is odd in rugby. I'm not a fan.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't think it works well for rugby at all, actually.
No. No. Because you could have one horrific load of weather, 6-3, and then win. I don't know. I'm just not. I'm really not a fan.
By the way, Sid, you're 100% right. You're 100% right. There can be two different styles of game, can't they?
Yeah, it just doesn't feel right. It's just not the sport. It's not the sport with all that. Yeah, I just don't like it. Sale v Bristol. So I say home win for that one.
Yeah, 100%.
But it's the leg thing. So it doesn't matter too much. It's more interesting to talk about what's going to happen next weekend. Toulouse Ulster, Phil.
Oh, my boys, who've been having a tough time. The preparation for this game has been 2 weeks or more than 2 weeks in South Africa. Which is not ideal preparation when you get marmalised by, who was it last week? Is it Stormers last week
and then
Bulls this week. That Bulls back row was absolutely monstrous. When Marcel Kurtzier is your open side flanker, you know it's a monstrous pack.
Yeah. The smaller of the three.
Yeah, exactly.
So they've just, but this is what, this two-legged thing is all about. Ulster have just got to go and hang in there.
Yeah.
Just hang in there because I'm like trying to have to make a big comeback against Toulouse at Ravenhill. You do not want that.
No. I think they can get something out of this game. I think they can get enough to make it at least interesting when it goes to Ravenhill. I really hope they do. But that said, probably Dupont will score 10 tries and assist 5. So it might That's be all over.
The evening kickoff, you got Stade against Racing, little Paris derby there will be pretty tasty. And I'm going to be at Exeter Munster. I'm so excited. Nice. I said when these fixtures came out, I said if I could pick a game to be at, it'd be Exeter Munster. I'm buzzing about that.
Awesome. That's an awesome fixture. That's a brilliant fixture, so isn't it?
Like, it's great. Works.
The fans, teams, styles. Yeah, this is a pure European Cup. Yeah, I actually do want to see this one over 2 legs. Genuinely, I do.
I'm kind of with you on that.
Yeah, yeah. This one works.
The other game that'll be a great one that we kind of skipped over, Bordeaux-La Rochelle.
Yeah.
I think that will be a great game. That's West Coast of France, not a million miles away from each other. And they've both on this upward trajectory over the last few years. And they've both got absolutely monstrous experienced packs as well. That will be a nice game.
It will. In the Challenge Cup, Biarritz Toulon, Newcastle Zebre, Benetton Perpignan, Dragons Gloucester. And then on to Sunday, where it's Montpellier Harlequins and Clermont.
I feel I've seen that game before.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen that game before. I know what you mean.
That was the Botica Bowl, wasn't it?
Oh, yes.
It was. When the loser gets Ben Botica.
Yeah. Yeah. And Clermont Leicester, that's pretty tasty. Not quite as tasty as it once would have been. Clermont aren't the team they were, but at Clermont, but that atmosphere alone will be great.
Yeah, Clermont aren't the team they once were, but the resurgence of Leicester means that they are they're worthy of being there. I think it's going to be a very, very well balanced game. Mm. I'm going for Leicester.
Give me Leicester.
Right.
Excellent.
There's the European Cup next week. Right. So, yes, we're going to do a separate podcast, women's rugby focus, with a review of that documentary. So we'll see you on that one. Hit subscribe in your podcast. If you've got to this point, you clearly have either nothing better to do or actually quite like the podcast. So if we've earned your subscription, that'd be fantastic. If we've earned a 5-star review from you, that would be brilliant. If you want to support us even more than that, then patreon.com/eggchasers and let the boys play.
The boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.